announced that our chairman, JR, won't be available today. And we're going to have Lisa Marshalls as our chair, Madam Chair, today. So with that said, I believe, Madam Chair, we have five committee members, voting members, and we can start.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. Belay, will you proceed with the roll call?
For sure. Representative Michael Carbone. Jagadishan Krishnamurthy. Brian Kirtland.
Present.
Eddie Cook.
I'm here.
Thank you. Nathan Young.
Present.
Wade Webb for Jennifer Thorpe.
Present.
Jeff Trillo for Ben Henry.
Present.
David Byers.
Here.
Lisa Marshalls for J.R. Sloan.
Present.
Lev Gonick.
Present.
Thank you. Jeff Paulson for Richard Stavnik.
Yep, Jeff Paulson with JLBC for Richard Stavnik.
All right. Thank you, everybody. As you see, we have new members, advisory and voting members, and we welcome them to the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. We can start.
Okay, terrific. So some of you don't know me, some of you do. I've been with the state and with ADOA Asset and the precursor, the Government Information Technology, for as long as Dave Byers can remember, but handle other functions. So just want you to know you're in good hands. Looking forward to this meeting. We have some very good agenda items. Thank you all for being here. First meeting in January, so we have great attendance. Thank you. Need to say this is a public meeting. So for those of you from the public, if you have any comments, the agenda has a link to how you can submit those public comments and make sure that you have the opportunity to speak on whatever it is that you feel is important to speak on. So thank you for being here. Thank you for participating in our processes. Conflict of interest. I need to find out, Halei, do we have any conflict of interest forms at this time?
No, Madam Chair, we don't.
Okay. Committee members, just a reminder, if it occurs to you that there is a conflict later on, then before we take a vote on any particular item, please speak up. I will also confirm with you that nobody wants to abstain and that there are no conflicts at the time of each vote as well. Alrighty then, I'm supposed to do something else next. I think I'm supposed to say that the next ITEC meeting is February 21st. I will remind you at the end of the meeting, and it is also written on the agenda. So we're back to our regular schedule after the holidays. Hope everyone had a wonderful holiday. Am I missing anything, Leigh, or are we ready to get into action items, including approval of minutes?
We are ready. Thank you.
Terrific. Okay. So we are, need a motion to approve the December 13th, 2023 recording of the last ITEC meeting. Would someone like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, this is Eddie. I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you very much. Someone second?
Madam Chair, this is Jiggy. I will second.
Thank you, Jiggy. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. anyone opposed? Anyone abstaining? All right, the ayes have it, and we are ready to move on. Halei, I think we're going to go into the PIDGAs next and review and approval of those. And we're starting out with Access, and I believe that's our EM, Karen Whiteford.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Whiteford. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, also known as ACCESS, who will introduce themselves after I provide a brief overview of the project. ACCESS is presenting a project investment justification to develop two enhancements to the Arizona Long-Term Care System, also known as ALTECS. The number of ALTECS applications received by ACCESS significantly increased in 2023, leading to a backlog of overdue applications waiting for a pre-admission screening or PASS assessment. ACCESS has prioritized two enhancements that will provide improvements to the PASS assessor experience, add efficiencies to the process, and better communicate with customers. At this time, I'll turn this over to the ACCESS project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Can everybody hear me fine? Great. My name is Dan Lippert. I am the Assistant Director for the Information Services Division here at ACCESS, so the ACCESS CIO. With me, I have Patty Dennis, the Assistant Director for the Division of Member and Provider Services. So she is the business side. Accompanying her is Marshall Wilmot, Deputy Assistant Director for the Division of Member and Provider Services. Anthony Flott, our Chief Technology Officer within ISD, and Joshua Worley, our Deputy Assistant Director for our Division of Business and Finance. So we can move to the next slide. I'd like to start by saying how this group is structured to work on HA Plus. So HA Plus is the eligibility system for the ACCESS program. It is got an executive steering committee that is got both ACCESS and DES members on it, as well as you can see the hierarchy there of how decisions are made and what's decided to move forward with. Then off to the left, you'll see the vendor, which is Accenture, and their structure for how changes are made. So everything goes through this committee to be approved. It also requires oversight from CMS, FNS, in addition to ITEC and JLDC. Next slide. At this point, I will turn it over to Patty Dennis to do the project introduction.
Thank you, Dan. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, ALTECS, which is a specialized program for those at need of nursing facility care or receiving home care in lieu of nursing facility care. Our applications for this program have significantly increased in the past year, and the trend continues. So the majority of our ALTECS applications that are waiting and going overdue and untimely, it's because they're waiting for a PASS assessment. So we have to take a step back and look at how can we improve that process? How can we make the PASS more efficient? And increase an overall better experience for both our staff and our customers. By doing this and making these changes, we're increasing casework efficiency, improving the quality of the PASS overall, helping with PASS assessment processes and technologies. How can we make it faster and better and a better experience for both our staff and our supervisors? And that, of course, rolls into a better experience for our customers. We PASS assessors have one of the highest turnover rates at ACCESS, and how can we stop that? How can we make it a better work? How can what we do and how they do it, how can we make it better? How can we make it less repetitive? So that's what we're asking for today. Next slide, please. We're asking for two technology solutions to improve the PASS process. First of which is develop HEA Plus offline capability. So the thing about the PASS is a PASS is conducted in the home, virtually and telephonically. And we have to have reliable, dependable internet, and we have to have internet. I mean, there's many cases, depends on where you're going in Arizona, there isn't hotspots and Wi-Fi's available. So what that means for the pass assessor is they have to conduct the pass on, it used to be a paper tool, now it's an Adobe version of the tool. So they take all of their notes when they're asking about their activities of daily living and their bathing habits and their eating habits and everything about this customer's life, they're taking notes that they'll put in an Adobe form. And then they get back to the office and they have to copy and paste and re-enter all of this information that they just captured on this several page long form back into HEA Plus, because we have to have it in, of course, the system of record. And that is where the scoring is done and all of those things that also are done in HEA Plus. So it's repetitive. They're doing that pass assessment twice. That's time they could be spent doing other tasks, but because of technology, they're not able to do that interactive pass of where they enter it directly in the HEA Arizona Plus as they're talking to that member. So how can we change that? How can we get them a feature where they can enter it in the pass tool, the same pass tool, no matter what? And if they don't have internet or if the internet goes down or can't keep a connection, when they get back to their office, they can just upload that pass. It's right there. It takes them a minute or 30 seconds, however long the process winds up taking, versus another hour re-entering all the information they just captured during that 1 hour to 2 hour pass assessment. So that's the first thing we're asking for. The second thing we're asking for is we need to configure denial, reason, functionality, and HEA Plus to include missing medical records. This is a shift in how we've done the past has occurred since 2020, as many businesses we've had to adapt. So prior to 2020, every past assessment was done in the home. So we would take the disclosure, the release of medical records to the home and say, while you're there visiting and doing your assessment, you get them to sign the form saying, we can have access to your medical records. Medical records are a required component to determine ALTEC's eligibility. So we have to have them. Well, a barrier we're experiencing is we're not getting signed releases for medical records. We've tried several projects. The past assessors manually send them out. We're doing some DocuSign electronic manually emailing them out, various things, but we're not getting the response we need. And without that signed release, we can't get the medical records. If we can't get the medical records, we can't determine eligibility. That's a barrier. But our staff have no way to discontinue the case for the individual's failure to help us get their medical records. So they have to do continual update and follow up with the member. I mean, you'll read case notes going, fourth follow up with member asking for a signed D202, which is the release of medical records, because we don't have a systematic way to request the release and deny if the applicant doesn't provide it to us as a requirement for eligibility. So we're asking for reconfiguration of HEA Plus to better support the past assessors.
Yes, thank you. We have a question from committee member Dave Byers.
Yeah, thanks. It seems a bit odd that a person's applying for these services and you're having trouble getting just to sign a release of records form. What would be the motivation or the problem of them signing the form that you're encountering? Because that's the other solution, get them to sign them. I take it you're not going out to the homes. You must be doing things virtually. So can you tell me more why you're not getting these signed health record releases?
So in some cases, it's not the applicant themselves. It's not the potential customer of the nursing facility that has to sign, that who is required to resign the release. It could have been their daughter that applied for them. It could have been a nursing home social worker that applied on their behalf. It could be another advocate that applied on their behalf. But these advocates and these authorized representatives cannot sign their medical release of medical records. So yes, we are doing things virtually and telephonically to be more efficient and more sensitive to the needs of today's world. But it has created a barrier from how we've always done business, which was take the form out and have it signed when we see the customer. And now we're seeing the customer in other ways. So we're not having that face-to-face where we can just say, please sign this form. So it's created a barrier for us that we need to automate. We're doing things now, but they're all manual and individual processes that aren't efficient and aren't the best use of time and resources. So we're asking to be able to make this an automated process.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that you need to have a denial or abandonment of the the request. It just seems odd that people want the service and it's a simple form to sign. It just seems strange to me that that's a big obstacle for you. Thanks.
Madam Chairman, are we able to continue?
Yeah, please, Ms. Dennis, want to continue with your presentation?
And up next is Anthony Flott to further discuss the offline capability.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patty, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to go through a slide if you could, next slide, please, on the offline technology capability that we are proposing to build into our eligibility system, HEA Plus. We will start with a central repository. SharePoint is what we're transitioning all of our EDMS to. It's a good fit. Electronic document management system capabilities is what we're transitioning to SharePoint. That's a great central repository that we'll start with. From there, you'll be able to download the offline capability tool. This tool, when you download it to a state issued device, will allow the assessor to be able to complete the form. It's written in a .NET, but it will allow them to be able to complete the form, at which point it will generate an XML file. That XML file will contain all of the necessary information that's needed to upload this into our eligibility system, HEA Plus. Once they have that XML file, when they get to an online location, a stable internet location, they can take those XML files or file and upload it to HEA Plus, which will immediately ingest all of the data that they inputted and allow it to have an actual submission into HEA Plus, thus saving them the time of having to retype or manually put in all of this information. Once it's in the eligibility system, it then goes through its normal adjudication process. So we feel like we have the security aspects of this locked down, meaning that it's only on a state-issued device. It's adhering to all the state-issued cybersecurity rules, as far as encryption, at rest, and in transit, etc. And again, we will only allow this on the devices that meet that criteria. Once that is done, the user would then delete the XML file as they would their standard file, kind of operating structure, right? So yeah, once it's uploaded, they'd confirm it uploaded, they would delete the XML generated file from there. So if there are no questions, I will put over to Dan on the next slide.
Okay. Sorry, I'm getting feedback from the AM. Mr. Young, do you want to ask your question, please?
I was curious. Are you integrating any data loss prevention measures?
So we have data loss prevention already on the state-owned assets, and so we'll continue to leverage the same solution that we already have in place.
Any other questions for Anthony? Someone's raising a question. I'm not seeing it. You were going to move on to another presenter.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First, my apologies. There's a work crew on site, and I have decided to start drilling through the floor. So if at any point it's hard to hear me, please let me know. Can we move to the next slide?
When they vacuum at my house, they only do it during important meetings. Thank you.
Of course. So first, what I'd like to discuss is we shared a little bit about the structure on who is involved previously. With this slide, I'd like to share where and how we share information, or what responsibilities are shared. So first and foremost, project management and payment management is always handled by the agencies. We want to make sure we're in charge of the project. We also want to make sure that we're in charge of our own user acceptance testing. Where we share with the vendor and DES and other contractors is through the development and review of user stories. We feel it's important to work those requirements with the vendor. User acceptance testing can be a shared responsibility, has to ultimately be approved by the agencies. Implementation is a shared endeavor, and implementation and post-implementation support. The vendor is responsible for the design sessions, development, quality assurance, and pre-production HEA Plus vendor regression testing. So that kind of shows where the different responsibilities are. Next slide. So as Patty mentioned, there are two different projects we're working on here that will integrate together as we move down the development life cycle. So the offline capability, assuming approval here, will start in February for design. It's planned for February and March. That's going to overlap with the design for the denial reason, which is scheduled for the month of March. We don't want to do a complete waterfall method, so what you'll see is build and QA overlaps with design. Build and QA goes through July. With user acceptance testing, again, not wanting to do complete waterfall, we'll be able to begin in June and overlap with the build. We want both of these products to go live at the same time. Production release is planned for September of this year. Any questions with either of these two slides? Okay, with that, I am going to turn it over to Joshua Worley to talk about project costs.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so as Dan just mentioned, the project itself should be completed by September 2024. So here on the project costs, we show the majority of the costs in state fiscal year 24 with that last quarter in FY25 for a total project cost of $1.7 million. Next slide, please. Typically, these projects have a state match and a federal match. This is true for this project as well, except we are allowed to use federal ARPA dollars as a state match. So in essence, this is a 100% federal project where we're using some American Rescue Plan money as our state match. And so this shows a split. It's a 75%, 25% split. Any questions on the finance component? Then I will pass it along to Patty.
Thanks, Joshua. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, what will success look like with these changes we're requesting? We've eliminated the offline, the need for internet. Being offline is no longer a barrier. It gives much more flexibility and consistency to our past assessors and saves time. In addition to that, we've improved communication through the denial reason, we've set expectations, and we've had an impact to improve timeliness. For our measures of success, we're looking at increasing our overall percentage of pass assessments completed within 45 days. We're currently, for Altex, running at 69%. We'd expect to see an improvement to 75% in a year. And additionally, we do overall external customer satisfaction surveys. And with the increased communication and the reduction of not repetitive work, so more efficient work, we would expect to see our overall customer satisfaction rating raise to at least 65%. Thank you. I believe that completes our section of the presentation.
Terrific. Any members, anyone else have any other questions? Eddie Cook.
Hi, Madam Chair, thank you. A question I have, obviously there's a problem, you have a backlog. And again, is the backlog because of the technology or is the backlog because you're seeing a large number of individuals now coming into the system?
It's both components are impacting our ability to make efficient decisions. Increase in applications, of course, drives everything we do, but we have these efficiencies and, you know, it's been a case of we need to work on, we have higher priorities. And because of the pass and what the pass does, ARPA funding was made available to us. And through the ARPA funding, the potential to do this project became available and became a potential. So we want to maximize the additional funding and the special funding available to make an improvement to a process that we've needed to do for a while, but we've made it other priorities. So this is affecting, if you were a pass assessor and you were in an area without internet and you had to do your work twice, that's no one wants to do work twice. And it delays getting answers to our customers. And these are customers that definitely deserve quick and efficient determinations. If they're not approved for Altex, in some cases, they don't know how they're going to pay for that nursing home they're living in, or how they're going to pay for their care. So we need to make efficient and quick decisions so that they can plan what their medical care is, what their living arrangements are, and how this is impacting them and their family.
I guess this is part two to my question, because if there are, you know, from a technology improvement, but you're also seeing more new customers, my question is, in developing this new product, new technology, I guess the question is, you know, in Arizona, especially Maricopa County, you know, we're continuing to grow in population. So the question I have is that if you're building this new platform, we'll call it, is it going to scale 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I just want to make sure that whatever the technology that's going to move forward is really addressing, you know, a particular problem, and that is scalable. So that's the reason why I asked the question. The problem that you're seeing, is it technology related or you're seeing more individuals coming into the system?
So Mr. Cook, if I may, I'll take that second part. I agree wholeheartedly with you that we're going to see more and more people. The technology that we have it is limiting the number of people we can see due to, you know, we have people doing things twice. If we're able to eliminate that, as Patty said, we'll be able to get to more people. We believe that this technology is sustainable and can be grown to accommodate the population that we continue to see. This is kind of in response to what you're saying, in that, yeah, we are seeing more people, and this will allow us to see those people and address their concerns and our obligations more effectively.
All right, thank you for answering my question.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. I think the next one who had a question was Lev Gonick.
Hi, yeah, thanks. I have no issues with the proposal as I've heard it and read it. What I do want to just ask is, given the source of funding, which is very, I'm glad to hear, essentially not only budget neutral, but ability to recycle some available federal funds, can we get some assurances that what we're hearing today in these two proposals represents the highest and most important use of these funds across the full spectrum of, I could well imagine, any number of projects that could be enhanced with technology?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that one. Joshua, I may need your assistance on that. Access has gone through a very rigorous prioritization process, should I say, to look at the best way to spend ARPA funds. No matter what kind of funding we're getting, whether it's federal, whether it's grant, whether it's state, we always have to look to make sure that we're making the best use of that, and we're applying it to items that are going to have a strong return for us. So the prioritization team and committee at Access believes that this is, there's a bunch of projects, and this one was one of those that got prioritized to the point where, yeah, this would be a good use of funds. One, for the very reason that Mr. Cook mentioned. So I can tell you what we went through to get to this decision. Does that answer your question, Mr. Gonick?
Yeah, I trust, you know, it's actually not a trick question. It's actually a very straightforward question, which is, you know, against what no doubt are multiple priorities, some assurances that it went through the rigorous process, which I think I heard you just say you've conducted, and there isn't a third, fourth, or fifth that actually represents more value add to either the internal or the customer base that that could have otherwise been presented for fund support and endorsement today.
That's exactly right. This is a decision that was made at the agency level based on top agency priorities.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lev. Thank you, Daniel. I think the next up was Mr. Byers.
I actually have two questions. My memory is that Access operates the system for Hawaii also. These improvements to will this be a function that available in Hawaii, or did they not partake in this activity?
Good question. There are certain items that Hawaii participates in with the state of Arizona. That line used to be anything that was MMIS related, which is Medicaid Management Information System. Previously, a bunch of years back, eligibility systems were not part of the MMIS. So the federal shares and all that were different. At the time we partnered with Hawaii 24 years ago, that's how it was. So at the time, we didn't partner on the eligibility systems because they were separate from the MMIS systems. That's since changed, but we haven't seen a financial advantage to merge eligibility systems. When you look at Medicaid, eligibility systems are where the states really have a lot of unique rules. So you lose your efficiencies of sharing when the rules can be so different. So long answer to say Hawaii is not participating in this one.
Okay, that's why we're not seeing any financial benefit payment from Hawaii. Second question, yes. can you go back one slide? With the second technology here, where you're going to be able to close out a case because of denial, or you're going to deny it because of lack of records, does that close out a case?
Yes.
Well, if that's the case, and it sounds like you have maybe hundreds or thousands of them, like some large number, isn't, I know this is maybe beyond the technology issue, but going from 69% to 75% doesn't seem to me to be a very ambitious goal, because you're going to be able to close out all those cases that are just sitting there building up. Wouldn't the completion rate, shouldn't it be reaching longer, like 90% within 45 minutes? Because you emphasize how important a rapid decision on these things are. It just seems like a low goal to me.
So we wanted to be something that's realistic, and we frequently will work with families. So while this will help us on some cases, it's not going to help us on every case. So it helps us because we're communicating up front, giving them that medical release up front. But if your daughter is coming to us going, hey, I talked to my dad, I'm seeing him tomorrow, I'm going to try and ask him one more time to sign that form, then we're going to work with you and we're going to allow that case to go overdue. So there's a balance because of the fragile population that we try so hard to work with our Altex customers, but we just need to have another capacity so that when members and applicants aren't working with us, that we can process the case and we're not tied to an inefficiency because we didn't project, 15 years ago that we would be doing telephonic passes today. This is really an outcome of the switch to telephonic and video passes, and we just need that technology to support them. I really hope that we're in the 80s and the high 80s, but just being realistic, I did not want to overpromise to the committee.
Okay, it just seems like a $2 million investment to get a 6% gain is kind of modest to me. But anyway, enough said. It's not a technology issue so much. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Mr. Young, I believe you have a comment or question.
Yeah, mine's more of a financial question about the operations with this project. Obviously, operational maintenance for a new application is part of planning. So do you plan on having the vendor handle all operational maintenance and that is included with the cost, or do you have internal staff that can take over once the vendor completes their work?
Yes, Mr. Young. I'll give a little bit of background first. The intellectual property of HEA Plus is owned 100% by the state of Arizona, which we feel is important so that we can maintain the system long term. Now, the system maintenance and operations we have outsourced to Accenture. And this will be part of our ongoing support agreement with Accenture. There will be a cost to add this to the M&O, I'm sure. But it'll be included with the rest of the work we have done with that organization.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Mr. Lippert, I believe we have a question from Mr. Paulson.
Yeah, just a quick clarifying question. This goes back to Mr. Byers' question. So the way I read it before was that this denial ability would be sort of a prerequisite for even submitting the application. But what I'm hearing now is they can still submit the application. The assessor will then just have the ability to deny the application after it's been submitted if they're unable to collect this release form. So rather than it being you're automatically can't even submit the application to be assessed, it's you still can, and the assessor has that discretion to either say I've tried a few times and now I'm denying it, or and maybe that answers some of the reason why you'll still have a lot of cases trying to follow up and get the form and not automatically, denying all these applications that don't get the release right away. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Paulson, that is correct. That we request this and we need it as part of it, but right, they're going to submit the application. And it's going to have a financial component as well. And so it's a two-part process. You have to be financially eligible for Altex, and you must be medically eligible for Altex. And this is further helping us on our medical assessment part of the HEA Plus program. That's correct. I mean, they're going to submit the application, and this is just another component that we'll ask for as part of the request for further information.
Mr. Byers.
Well, just to follow up, what percentage, you know, rough idea, how many of the people applying, how many do you have to deny because they don't file the release? What percentage?
So we've never been able to deny. Well, according to statute and regulations, we can deny for this reason. We've never been able to deny for it because it's not incorporated into the system.
Okay, well, do you have an estimate of if now it's put in?
My estimate is I probably have about 100 to 200 cases sitting today pending that could be denied if I had the technology
to deny
to do this.
But what?
And that's out of my, I'm sorry, Mr. Byers, and that's out of what is currently pending overdue that does not include anything that hasn't even gone overdue yet. I've just been looking at my overdue cases recently, and I currently have over 500 overdue cases awaiting the pass assessments.
But you had an increase of 6,000, so it's still a relatively small percentage, am I right?
Well, the 6,000 was over the course of a year.
Yeah. Well, what I'm getting at is, and maybe it's prompted it, have you ever thought about requiring that release before you proceed with the application? Because if this was a large percentage, so you go through all the interview and all the work, and at the end of the day, it's all wasted time if you don't get the medical records released. If that was a large percentage, I would think you might want to consider moving that up and saying, we're not going to proceed unless we get this record released. But anyway, get on.
So this will help us change some of our operational efficiencies, meaning that form is going to go out with the beginning. When we ask for further income and resource information, we're also going to ask for this form and make it more efficient. I mean, per Medicaid rules, we have to allow anyone to apply. So we can't stop them from applying because they didn't sign this form. And because of the rules related to releasing medical records, we can't incorporate it into the application that signed. It has to be a separate individual form that we're able to submit to others. So this change we're requesting just strengthens Healthy Arizona and allows us to have that capability of being more efficient, to automatically issue a request for medical records release. And for those cases where they're not cooperating with us and not getting us signed forms and or medical records, then we have a case option to act on that case and close it out and move on and spend the time on those cases you talked about where they are working with us and where they really are interested in Altex benefits. I hope that helps, Mr. Byers.
Thank you all. This has been a very robust conversation. Any remaining comments before we move to a motion?
Madam Chair, I just want to mention that Jagadish's son, Krishnamurthy, has joined our call, and he's one of our voting members.
Thank you very much, Leigh. Yes, and we'll mention that he's on recording as seconding our motion on the minutes. So we have that evidence so that he was here the entire time that we had this conversation as well, which is great as we move to a motion. Any other comments? All right. Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Lev, so moved.
First, I think, actually, I missed a step. I apologize. This is not my usual rodeo. I think we're going to need to read and review the conditions. So, Karen, is that you?
Yes, it is me. And actually, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Asset is recommending that the PIDG be approved with the conditions as presented. And those should appear on the slide.
Thank you very much. Now I guess I ask for the motion. Thank you.
Madam Chair, it's Lev again, and so moved.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second this, Brian.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right, looks like the ayes have it and this is approved. Thank you, Access team. Very robust presentation and very responsive to the committee's questions. Thank you very much. All right, next agenda item. We are moving on to the Department of Corrections and we have a presentation from their engagement manager, Haley Greenberg.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Madam Chair and members of the committee, in April of 2023, an injunction was issued to the Department of Corrections requiring a radio frequency identification, known as RFID, system to better track and monitor both inmate and staff for transparency and accurate movement through complex detention and mental health wards. The RFID system will bring validity and accountability to capture real-time data electronically, in doing so, reducing the use of paper logs as well as increased staff and inmate oversight. At this time, I will be turning this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nat Nesvig. I'm the Senior Program Manager responsible for the PMO at the Arizona Department of Corrections. I am here with my team, Richard Evich, our Assistant Director of Finance, Stephen Baird, our Chief Information Officer in IT, Steve Bernasso, our Deputy Chief Information Officer in IT. We are also joined by our vendor, Guardian RFID, several representatives from that company. Next slide, please. In April 2023, as Haley mentioned, ADCRR was party to an injunction which addressed several facets of our prison system, one being the automation of operational workflows, task reporting, inmate tracking, and monitoring movement. It specifically called out the implementation of an RFID system, which would be supported by Wi-Fi in restricted housing areas, which we've identified as detention and mental health wards. The RFID system will provide validation for both inmate and CO activity. This is accomplished through real-time or near real-time digital logging, and also includes some audio, video, and photography of these activities. Part of our operational and business issue stems from the fact that an RFID system in this specific area would pinpoint our correctional officer and inmate locations. Without an RFID system in these restricted areas, it would be difficult to do so. It would be difficult for us to track those movements in case of any kind of an emergency. The benefit to the state and the agency, as well as its constituents, is, of course, the compliance with the terms of our injunction, but it's more than that. It provides us with the ability to track and secure the staff movement. This then allows for transparency in those restricted areas. It contributes to the overall accountability of that staff as well as our inmates. And it ensures that our staff are where they need to be, that our security personnel can easily locate them at any given time. Next slide, please. As part of our due diligence in this project, we issued an RFP in August of 2023. In that RFP, we provided a very robust, comprehensive SOW with the Wi-Fi heat maps, as well as area location information. The respondents included only one RFID vendor and only one Wi-Fi vendor. The RFID vendor that responded was Guardian RFID. They are actually our current vendor in a PIG demo project, which launched at our Iman Browning location in May of 2023. A Wi-Fi vendor was not known to the state, unknown vendor. The Wi-Fi estimate was in excess of $21 million over 5 years. It had an installation period, according to their response, which exceeded the parameters of the injunction. I want you to understand too that ADCRR can actually stand up this RFID system within our current Wi-Fi bandwidth. But long-term, we recognize with the addition of photographs, videos, and audio clips, we will require the implementation of a Wi-Fi system. To that end, the agency also recognizes that $21 million in that bid is a bit of a hefty cost to pay for a Wi-Fi system. So we sought out additional, more cost-effective solutions for the Wi-Fi piece of this project. What we're presenting today is solely the RFID piece of the project itself. However, the new solution that we are looking into for the Wi-Fi will be provided by a third-party vendor. It's called Network as a Solution. The approximate cost will be $1.25 million in development, or $6.25 million over 5 years. So there's a comparative cost here of $21 million versus $6.25 million. Today, however, we are going to talk about the RFID system. We will return to ITAC once our contract is completed with this vendor and present for the change request for the network as a solution. Our technology is basically the same current system that we have, the Guardian RFID system at our Ian Browning location. This demo project has proven to be very successful in meeting the criteria for both agency tracking and reporting. We believe it's going to be very much the same for our other housing units. Next slide, please. So an overview of our proposed solution. We will have an injunction compliant tracking system for both our detention and mental health wards. This is going to be a system that will be implemented for 20 of our mental health and detention wards across 12 of our complex locations. This will increase our ability to provide timely medical transference services and schedules for our inmates, as well as oversight for our correctional officer activities. That provides for more accountability. So what do I mean by some of the accountability? One example might be that digital records will provide us with timely inmate transference of medical and mental health appointments. We create more accountability within our CO systems. They can care for our population more closely. They can get them to their appointments on time, and we have the documentation. Additionally, the video recordings, the digital logs of the inmates, whether they accept or refuse things like food, medication, hygiene appointments, enable us to better monitor these events and manage them more efficiently and effectively. We can also see from these logs whether or not these inmates need care on a more immediate basis. So this helps us with that whole facet of caring for our inmates. Next slide, please. Our project timeline looks like this. Part of what we do with the RFID system is to install tags. These tags are part of the tracking system. All of the tags can be installed for this project in total over a 4-month period of time. We'll begin with locations 1 through 6 on the schedule, which is in this the appendix of this deck. And our vendor, Guardian RFID, is going to run 2 teams of installers for this system, which is going to prove to be very, very effective in getting this up and running by July 1st. So the first 6 locations will be installed by the end of March, with testing to follow and a go live by the 1st of May. The following 7 to 19 locations, which are very, very small. Some of these housing and detention areas have maybe 6 beds, 12 beds, 10 beds, as opposed to an entire complex unit. So it's much, much easier for us to do larger quantities of them at once. The second team from Guardian RFID will handle locations 7 through 19, while the first team is closing out sections 1 through 6, and then we'll move on to location 20. Location 20 is just about as large as locations 1 through 6, as you can see here in our graph. And we've saved it for last, so that first team will migrate onto that third set of installations. And we expect to have this done by around the 1st of July. Next slide, please. Our project costs look like this. Our first year costs include professional and outside services, some hardware. The hardware includes scanners that our COs carry. They scan the tags. The tags then give them a location where they begin. They scan the last tag, which is the location where they end. And that shows that digital record of how they've transferred that inmate where they're going, where they can be located, et cetera. The hardware itself also includes our mounting. It includes the tags. It includes our batteries and anything else that we absolutely need to use as part of the system. The license and maintenance fees for about 6 months or more, as well as any other costs that fall into that bracket. Our total development for our first year is about $1.6 million, and then we'll be participating in the license and maintenance fees over the following 4 years for a total cost of this project of about $7.77 million for the RFID piece. Next slide, please. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, our project responsibilities are to partner with Guardian RFID. Not only will we partner with them to effectively and efficiently deliver a top-notch project, but we really will share in a lot of the responsibilities, as you can see here. We will both have project management responsibilities to ensure accountability for both the vendor and ourselves. We'll gather requirements together, we'll analyze those requirements, and we'll complete those system requirements as a team. We'll also each have project managers here. We will, as an agency, conduct the user acceptance testing, then the change management, while they'll handle the conceptual network design and the development of the solution platform. Together then, we'll work on those system interfaces and integrations. We have some of that within the project itself. We'll work on those customizations, which we know to be part of this project, having done this already at the Eyman Browning location. We'll work together on data migration and also on training. Not only will Guardian RFID provide us with training manuals and some form of training, we'll also do a train-the-trainer kind of approach, which we've seen to be very, very successful at the Eyman Browning location. And finally, we'll deploy the solution. Next slide, please. So what does success look like in this project? You know, as an agency, we've already witnessed some tremendous success with the Guardian RFID system at the Eyman location. And we're confident that we will see similar KPIs and be able to track the validity of the data in this newly implemented system. So we are kind of ahead of the curve, if you will, on the KPIs. We've seen this system in action since May, and we know that it's effective. So within 3 months in this RFID system, we expect to see a 60% increase in log efficiency. We'll stop use of the clipboards. We'll stop using those paper log entries, and we'll have everything on digital record. Within 6 months, this RFID system will increase our staff performance by 50%. Our COs activities will be tracked. We'll be adding pictures and videos to supplement the validity of the data, and we'll be able to better track our inmate activities. In 6 months as well, the RFID system will increase the speed of our inmate oversight by our correctional officers. This is 80% as the data is going to be quantifiable and queryable at any time. So this is a real-time or a near real-time system. We can go in and get reports at any time to see exactly what's going on within that prison system. And then within 12 months, the RFID system will eliminate the use of paper logs, paper consumption, and any inaccuracies we may be currently seeing in our data logging by the corrections officers by over 70% in that restricted movement areas. So recognizing that our restricted movement areas are only the detention areas and our mental health areas, we can tell you firsthand that we have seen this kind of success at the Eyman location thus far. Next slide. And that's our presentation. Questions?
Thank you very much, Nat. Committee members, questions, please. Yes, Eddie Cook.
Madam Chair, thank you. Question, it sounds like this technology takes advantage of the cloud. And of course, I don't know much about this technology, but I'm thinking about the amount of bandwidth and monitoring of all of these, we'll call it wristbands maybe, that are attached to individuals. How is the infrastructure going to support that at each of the locations? Do we have to do, you know, improvements in infrastructure at these locations to support the level of bandwidth that might be, you know, increased in those areas? I'd like to understand that.
Mr. Cook, Madam Chair, members of the committee, our experience thus far has been that this system does not demand a tremendous amount of bandwidth. We've actually been piggybacking off of some excess bandwidth off of one of our locations to be the Browning location. And the Browning location, just for your information, is quite a large location. However, we do recognize that we are going to need some sort of a Wi-Fi system. And that's why we've chosen to go with network as a service, primarily because we don't have to go back in and do any substantial infrastructure upgrades at this point in time to utilize that service and to still have it benefit this system.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook, Ms. Nesvig, Mr. Young.
Hi, this is more of a technical question that might be related to a few others, but can you tell me the reason why hand scanners were selected over maybe post RFID scanners that are at the entrances to specific locations?
Mr. Young, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I cannot. I can tell you that when we did conduct the RFP, we had one respondent. We were obligated to make a choice at that point in time on a rather expedited basis based upon the injunction itself. We had to have a decision in place and a vendor in place by the end of December, and the responses came in at the end of October. So we are familiar with this technology. We know that it works, and that's what we have gone with.
It looks like we have a hand raised from Mr. Lake. Is that in response to this question or with additional question?
No, that's in response. As far as putting up scanners at a gate detection sort of system like that, that does work for monitoring the inmate movements, but having the bands on the wristbands or on the inmates themselves, that's where it comes into things like head counts, meals, observations, supply pass. It's documenting that officer-inmate interaction, not just the inmate moving around the facility.
Mr. Young, did that answer your question, or do you have a follow-up?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you. Terrific. Mr. Paulson. Did you have another question? Was there another raised hand?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't unmute myself.
No worries.
Just a quick clarifying question. I happen to be, for better or worse, very familiar with the injunction. And I'm looking in the appendix and I see only the state operated prisons are covered here in terms of the locations. Is it fair to assume that the court is satisfied with the private prison sort of tracking of inmates and we don't feel the need that this part of the injunction applies to any private prison movement of inmates between healthcare and their other settings?
Mr. Paulson, I'm going to go ahead and pass that question off to Mr. Evich, who is also familiar with the injunction, for response.
Thanks, ma'am. Members of the committee, Mr. Paulson. So yes, this has been reviewed by the court. So our solution is something they recommend in terms of the private prisons. They're not part of the subclass population as identified. So that's why this solution primarily focuses on those that are in the subclass populations within the state prison complex and those units.
Great, thanks.
All right, any additional questions from committee members? All righty, then back to the engagement manager for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. ACID is recommending that the PIDG be approved with the following conditions as presented.
All righty. Committee members, any questions on the conditions? If not, I'll call for a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Eddie. I move to approve based upon the conditions.
Thank you very much, Eddie. Anyone second?
This is Jaggi, Madam Chair. I'm seconding.
Thank you very much. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, then the motion has passed and been approved. Thank you for the robust presentation and discussion, and congratulations, and go forward and make wonderful things happen, as JR would always say. Next, we have an informational item. This one is from the Arizona Department of Administration. Will be introduced by our engagement manager, Justin Moakland.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Justin Moakland, and I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members from the Arizona Department of Administration who will introduce themselves and provide the committee with an informational update to the overall status of their HRIS modernization project aimed towards improving the tools available to the human resource staff.
Yes, Justin, do you want questions from the committee during the presentation or at the end?
I'll pass that on to Alba and Sean Price.
I'm okay as we go through, Lisa.
Alrighty then.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sean Price. I hold the position of Deputy Director with the Arizona Department of Administration, and I am the Program Director for the AZ360 HRIS Modernization Project. And my Deputy Program Director, Alba Valencia, is also on the call and will be tag teaming this presentation for the committee. Go to the next slide. So I believe there might be some new members. I'll quickly go over this. So the AZ360 HRIS modernization project is moving our HRIS solution from our current 20 plus year old legacy solution of Lawson into Advantage, which is a CGI solution. This Advantage solution is also the same solution that our Arizona Financial Information System sits on. So both AFIS and HRIS will be on the same platform going forward once we complete implementation of this solution. Current project launch was in October of 2022. And as we have moved forward through this project, our current anticipated implementation date is September of 2024. The project is currently in red, and the project has been in red status since the July timeframe. I'm chasing people off, it looks like. So this is our project timeline. And as you can see, currently in the timeline, we are in the middle of integrated system testing. We still have some configuration and development that we're working on, and UAT script writing on top of data conversions and many other things. We are behind in the project, obviously, with the red status. So some of these actions we have either put on hold or haven't got to yet. So we can talk a little bit more about where we're at and how things are going. So I think we can go to the next slide, but I'm going to kind of change it up a little bit. So before I jump into this work stream process, all of our metrics and go through our status and how we've done over the last month, I wanted to touch base with some of the information that myself and Alba brought to the committee last month. So we are in red, we've been in red. And what we brought to the committee was we've done a lot of work over the last 3 months in taking a step back, doing a full assessment of the project, digging into identifying a level of effort of all actions that we still needed to accomplish in the project. We then took that information and started working on a future state project plan. of true understanding of what is it going to take that from a time perspective, also from a people perspective, to get this project to done. We've been updating that work and continuing the progress on that. But the other piece of that was we needed to know how far behind and where we were behind, and so that we could start putting in mitigation efforts to close that gap. And so that's what I spoke about last time, is we have put a number of mitigation efforts in place. There are places that we have closed that gap, but the reality of that gap, it's far greater than the mitigation efforts that we have put in place or can put in place that we know of at this point. So due to that, we have started the process with CGI to come up with a future state project plan of based on the data and everything that we know to date of potentially how far out we would need to push this project. And so where are we with that? So CGI and the state have been working essentially the last 4 to 6 weeks on this. CGI has produced a rough draft of a future state project plan. We got our eyes on it actually late Friday night of last week. So it's the first time we've seen the full development of it. We've had some back and forth conversations around it, so we had an idea what it was going to look like. So CGI did present that plan to Elizabeth Thorson and myself. So Christine Johnson and James Kane, who work with CGI, presented that plan on Tuesday in a meeting this week. And we are in the process right now of working through that future state plan. And we have meetings majority of the day tomorrow and going into next week of providing CGI feedback of our thoughts behind that plan. The biggest component of that plan the biggest piece that CGI did use is all of that work that we have done over the last couple of months around level of effort, is they built that into the plan. So they took that into account of what the push would look like. So that plan, an initial push, which is just a draft at this point, is pushing the project into March of 2025. So it's roughly about a 5 to 5.5 month push based on that data. We're not saying that's what it's going to be at this point, because we need a couple more weeks to work with CGI and going back and forth on, you know, if they miss anything. Obviously our teams are going to have a lot of thoughts behind it, because obviously a lot of the work is also on the state side of the project. So I know there's process to come back to ITAC for a change request. So some of the things that we still needed to do before that, the next big component is CGI is doing a financial analysis of the push. We asked CGI to bring to the table by February 2nd, a 6 month, 7 month, and 8 month financial push for the project. So at least we had an idea of what it's going to cost if we do push the project for those 3 months. And then obviously we're gonna work over the next 2 months to kind of the next 2 weeks to nail down what is the amount of time that's going to push. And then we'll work with, once we get those two things, obviously financial is going to be the big piece. You know, so we'll have to work internally of ADOA to understand what that looks like, and not knowing how big that is. And obviously we're not, don't have the ability to go to the budget. So we'll have to figure out what it looks like overall. And then we will be coming to asset, and then obviously to the committee for a change request. Go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead and finish, and then I'll ask my question. I thought you were wrapping up there.
No, go ahead and ask it. I can talk all day, Dave.
Okay. When you guys reviewed this last time, somebody on your team made the point that there were very few windows during the year that you could go ahead and do the cutover to the new system. And as I recall, March was not one because of tax time, and then there was year end, that was, you know, July, and so it was looking to me like you had no choice but probably next September. looks like you made significant progress since last time, but can you speak to that point? So even if it's ready, say in March, are you prevented from doing the cutover because you'd be in tax season? And then are you prevented from doing it when you're at year end? So tell us, when can you do it once it's ready?
So you are correct, Dave. There are times throughout the year that just makes it's more painful, I guess you would say, to move from the current solution to the new solution. I think March, I know we need to talk a little bit more with CGI. It might be one of those that is a little bit painful because of tax season. I definitely know getting into April and May, it's not as bad, right? Those are probably 2 months that are pretty open, right? And then when you start bleeding into June, right, or end of May, June, you start getting to year end, we're closing things out and procurement and all those things, right? So so I would say, Dave, like a sweet spot is probably in that April timeframe for the least amount of pain to move, you know, to switch over at this point. But CGI did come back. They came back with a date based on the data. So I think, and that's what we asked of them. We said, you know, come back with what the data is telling us. So they have a big old spreadsheet that has every action, exact amount of time it takes for that action, who's going to do that action. I mean, it is, we have a fully built out project plan, Dave, that's north of 800 lines at this point of action. So it's heavily detailed. And that's one of the requests that when we started talking about this with CGI, when they came to us, said, we're going to need to push this project. We said, we want essentially, even though we're agile project, we essentially want a waterfall approach. I mean, like, because we need to know what is everything that we need to accomplish and who's doing it and when are they doing it and how much time is it going to take to get it done. Without that, we wouldn't entertain a pushing of the project the feedback we gave them from the state side. So they have produced that, and that's what we're going through now. So
to follow up, it sounds like if you get everything done, say in March or early April, there might be an opportunity there April, May. If you miss that, you probably have to wait until August, September, because you don't want to do it during the year-end transfer. So you got those two opportunities. Is that correct?
I would say that's fair.
All right, thanks.
All right, so we'll continue to work with Asset, and as we get more information from CGI on, but like I said, it's really gonna, I think at this point it's gonna come down to budget and what that looks like to what we can do and work through that. So I anticipate a change request is probably gonna end up being in the March ITAC. I don't think we can get all the information that we need to get to the committee in February, but you know, we'll work towards the February timeframe, but definitely by March. Internal conversations at this point have been, just being honest and open with the committee, we're keeping this pretty tight lip in a sense. I know that's going to get out because this is a public meeting, but we're not showing this project plan to many people, even within the project. It's staying at the senior level. We want to work through it. We don't want to message anything down to our teams until we at least have a good firm date. We have brought in obviously all of our senior leaders into reviewing it and our key leads for the project, which are payroll, benefits, and time and leave, and personnel. So those three individuals are involved in it. So, but we're trying to keep this as confidential as possible from a documentation standpoint, because it's, you know, I mean, when you start pushing things, people's behaviors change and things of that nature, and we just want to make sure we curb that as much as possible. So any other questions on that piece? So with that said, we continue to march towards the September 24th go live date. We're not going to change that until we have a new project plan and everybody signed off on it. So we'll continue to work hard and accomplish the tasks that are in front of us. So the slide you have in front of you, I know it's a lot of information and data. It's one that we've been showing. You will see that we have made tremendous progress, especially in the area of benefits, which was one of the three areas that was significantly behind. They are definitely getting to a point of being on time and caught up in the project, which is great. Time and leave and payroll still are behind, and a big contributing factor of those two areas being behind is because of data conversion. And as we are converting, building out the tables and converting data, and what we presented last ITAC meeting is the data conversion area is the key area that is behind from a technical standpoint. That area was about 5 months behind. And so we've obviously put mitigation efforts in to close that gap, but the gap's still there, which is then impacting some of the development area, not having those tables done and that data in place to accomplish some of the configuration that we needed. So, but I believe the majority of configuration was supposed to be completed in the September, October timeframe. We're on track right now, I believe, going into the beginning of March is we'll have all of our configuration done, which is a big win for the project. So at that point now, it's really focusing in on, continue to focus in on data conversion when we get there, and then obviously continue our IST, so our testing, and then getting into our user acceptance testing and so on. So, and you can see some of the data in there, just tracking the data conversions through the three major steps within the process. So definitely have made significant progress in data conversions. I know Alba is going to cover a couple slides a little bit later on. She'll go in a little bit more detail of some of the big accomplishments that we've had from a data conversion standpoint. And as I spoke to last committee, and which I know a lot of you know, is the data is always the hardest piece. You know, that a lot, this is some crazy stuff. We are looking at this data, and you know, you got to think that the current data solution has been in place since 2003. And when they started that solution in 2003, which is the Lawson solution, they did not clean up the data that they dumped into the 2003 solution back then. So we have a lot of old data. We have records of state employees going back many, many, many years. Which has been interesting, like as we're building out these new data tables, we have agencies that no longer exist. We have positions that no longer exist. So you're like, we got to bring these people over, but they have no agency because they're retired. So you have to bring the data over. What do we do with it, right? So, I mean, just some, there's a lot of decisions like that as we build these new data tables as we go forward. So it's definitely interesting things, you know, as we work through the data. So go ahead and go to the next slide. Alba, I think we're turning, you're doing slides 6 and 7.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that because it really puts into context the magnitude of the project, right? We have approximately less than 35,000 employees, right around 33, 34. And there's hundreds of thousands of rows of data out there that, you know, we have to decipher and in some cases make some decisions on translations and get that information, that data over into the new Advantage system. So I just wanted to go over quickly, you know, a couple of things, highlight what we've done in the past month and in the past year. One of those big transactional tables is what's called the PSMT or the position table. And we loaded 55,000 rows at a success rate of 97.5. And that is amazing because that it took so much time to load this table. This was a very labor intensive table to load because of the number of decisions that had to be made. You know, we wanted to make sure that the outcome was, the end result was what we needed it to be. So it just took a lot of time to do that, to complete that table. And the same thing for the next table, what's called the ESMT or the employee table. As you can imagine, this table has a lot of information in it, a lot of data fields, and we have over 250,000 rows of this particular data table. And so We're working on this one right now. We're really close to running this in the final conversion load. So this one is really close, and this represents a lot of data decisions, you know, information that was not quality data that had to be brought over. So we had to make some quick decisions around this particular data. As far as what we've done in the past year, you know, just again, looking at the magnitude of what this project entails, there are, I believe, close to 19 or 20 total sprints. And we've completed, as of the reporting period, we completed 11 of those sprints. And each of those sprints are 4 weeks. We have approximately 4,700 user stories. And if you're familiar with Agile, you know that that represents a block of time and a particular task. So there's 4,700 of those, and we've completed 2,400. So, I mean, really a lot of progress has been made on these. And then as far as what our processes look like, we've got 104 total processes, and we've completed 69 of those so far. So we're making good progress. Over half of those have been completed. We also had what's called our business process demonstrations. Those were very well attended, and the excitement, the anticipation over what's coming in the new system is really positive. It's contagious. People are hearing about what the new system can do, and they're telling their friends, which is exactly where we want to be. Sean, do you have a question?
I just wanted to add to that. Last week, they demoed the benefits wizard. So they, the benefits team walked us through, as a state employee, when we do either a new state employee comes on board, or obviously we do enrollment every year. It was very smooth and easy to use. So it was, the structure was really nice. And obviously, being a state employee over a decade, I know that a lot of long-term state employees on here, it's, I think you'll be very happy with the new structure once we get the system implemented.
I agree. Thank you for that. Yeah, and then just really quickly, we've got the AZ360 website, and it is also being utilized. People are going into the website and searching for information on the project, looking for possibly past demonstrations. You can go in there and see a recording. Those are all posted on the website. Or documentation related to certain items. So a lot of interest around our website, which is good. You can go to the next slide, Thomas. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about what Sean touched on as far as what our mitigation strategies are. We had a little bit of a change in our Agile methodology. Obviously, we're following the implementation methodology that CGI has, and which was Agile. And so we implemented a slight change to our approach, in that our daily standups were a mixture of our technical, our functional folks. Leadership was on that call. Sometimes we would have over 60, 70 participants on that particular call. And so, as you can imagine, it didn't lead to a very constructive conversation about what the real roadblocks are. So we did make a change, and we restructured that particular meeting to be more work stream specific and much, much smaller. So these daily standups have at the most maybe 10 participants within a particular work stream. And the conversation is supposed to be structured around, what is a blocker? What is your particular blocker for the day? What is preventing you from moving forward with a particular task? And then that blocker is brought to a leadership meeting held the same day within 20 minutes. And that leadership group meets to figure out ways to remove or eliminate that blocker. So it's supposed to lend to, you know, real-time removal or elimination of blockers and addressing things the same day. And that's really what it's led to. It was a little painful at first. The team was resistant to the new approach. But as soon as we got through the bumps, I think it's gone over really, really smooth. And we have been able to eliminate quite a few blockers for the team. So, I mean, that's tremendous progress for the project. And this next one, Sean already mentioned, you know, the what our effort is around our new project plan and what we've done with that. And really, I mean, the fact that we're taking our past trajectory and momentum into consideration and using that as a guide for what our level of effort is going forward and what it will be till the completion of that particular milestone or task, that is really guiding us to have a realistic project plan. And that is the goal. That's what we want to go forward with. So we're pretty excited about the new project plan. So I can't say enough good things about that, but that's where our focus has been for the past couple months. And then on as far as resources, we've added quite a few resources. We're able to target, you know, some of those areas that we know are behind, such as payroll, time and leave, and trying to target those areas so that we can make sure that they have enough resources, that the right resources are allocated, and that we're really targeting that particular work stream or area. And that will continue to happen. I mean, we will continue to do that throughout the duration of the project. So these are some of our mitigation steps. I do think that it is making an impact on our project overall. We still need to do some, you know, some more work, additional mitigation strategies to really get us to where we need to be. But a key part of that is going to be the new project plan and some of the other things that we've put into place. So looking forward to that. I think we'll have some more updates for you in February and March.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Alba. Is that... Great, time for Q&A. Any other questions from the committee at this time? All righty, then thank you. Go forward and continue to do wonderful things. I'm supposed to remind everyone, were there any, first of all, was there any public comment that we received? If not, hearing none, reminder that the next meeting of ITAC is February 21st. I want to once again thank the new members and also the designees who attended on behalf of existing and new members and for the very active participation today. It was an honor and pleasure to be your chair. If there's no other business, I'll call for a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Thank you. A second?
I second. This is Jeggy.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All righty, then the ayes have it. Thank you very much, and thank you for the teams that worked so hard to present today.
Bye.
Alrighty then.
See. All right, I think everybody's gone.
Yay.
All right.
Stop recording.
Yes, stop.
Good job, Lisa.
Just got to remind everybody I called Halle out for.